All right, we're back. So lots of people have been hitting the site, tagger.it. So I'm going to tell you right now, if you're out there and stuff is acting goofy, well, you know, hey, this is just a demo. This is all RC. It's still fun. I took a few minutes and uploaded a bunch of my own photos. They work great on this side. But if you're one of those folks that are out there and the external tagger is acting goofy, well, just chalk it up to, you know, it's all good fun.
But so, we have a lot of changes to make to tag your it, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Some of those, if there are issues, they may go away. So, you know, the fun part is just coming. This is the session I've been waiting for this morning. I actually love the next one a lot. Actually, I love session 5 and I love session 6. It just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, it really does. So as I mentioned in the beginning, not only is this RC stuff and things may be goofy, but I also mentioned in the beginning it may seem like it's kind of ramping up a little slow. Now is where it starts to get really fun. So now, from here on out, we're going to integrate like this is probably 19 or 20 of the different scenarios that we talked about earlier. This one is one of my favorite sessions too. It's going to be Azure Functions and Cognitive Services. And so just as a recap, if you're joining us, this is where we're at. We've created this really cool ASP.NET Core solution, added Application Insights. As a note, we were running a little short on time in Application Insights, and I didn't go out and show you the cool analytics. What I'm going to do is I'm going to just wait and do that in the Power BI session, because I really want you guys to see it. You know, I'm a developer, you're a developer, I'm a developer. This is something that's near and dear to my heart. Session 2, we went through and we moved it from Azure SQL to SQL Server 2016 and talked about this concept of Azure storage, object storage specifically. But then Ninja Cat called and said, throw it all now into Azure Functions. So we were going to stretch this out a little bit, but now we're just going to throw it all into Azure Functions and talk about calling cognitive services. So I say we just move right into that.
I'm with you. You know, it's funny how you have to be very flexible, don't you, when you're doing a live event and you're getting calls from famous people like that. Mm-hmm. I wonder who might call next.
I don't know. My guess is they're going to ask for something. They're demanding. Every single person that has called so far, which is just two, has just wanted something. Mm-hmm. It's almost like we're being used. So let's take a look at this slide. So Azure Functions, if you don't know what Azure Functions are, number one, you're not alone. Number two, I'm not surprised. Number three, you are missing out, because this is one of the few things that's hard for me to even explain how cool it is. So as I mentioned before, I've been writing software for a long time. I'm an old guy in this industry now, right? So maybe 28 years I've been doing this. There have been 4 or 5 times during my career that I've said, man, it is good to be a Microsoft software developer, this being one of them because of everything that's changed. Developers are telling me now, they're telling me and talking to me all the time, they say, I want to write software, I just want to write it with Notepad, or I just want to write it with the console, or I want a full IDE, or I want it to push out to Mac, or I want it to, you know, push out to Linux, I want to do all this stuff. And so many of these scenarios they're talking about, they want some really cool functionality that the first thing I start thinking of is, man, you have got to integrate Functions, Azure Functions, nano services into your solution so that you can easily get all of this crazy stuff that you want using any tool technology you want and have it available everywhere. So the idea of Azure Functions is that, number one, they're serverless, means that we're not going to have to provision a server, worry about any kind of a server. These are just running and reusable out in Azure. The other thing is that they're event-based. And what I mean by event-based is that functions don't do anything until you kick them off with something, and we'll look at what that means a little bit later. They can also be chained and nested, and this is an area that developers don't actually realize, that they can be chained and nested. So one function can call another function. You can have logic in there that says, almost like a flow within the function where you can nest them and have a parent-child relationship based on certain logic. They're so easily integrated into workflows, and again, workflows, one aspect is like Azure Logic Apps, which are way undermarketed, way underused at this point. If you think of Microsoft Flow, if you guys haven't used Microsoft Flow, it's the concept of flow, but a developer can just, it's wide open, a developer can do whatever they want, create these intricate, complicated logic flows, and Azure Functions can be a piece of that, because an Azure function can be activated through a logic app, it can return information, it can do all kinds of stuff, heavy, you know, all kinds of heavy lifting. In fact, the function that we're going to create in this session does a lot. In fact, my guess is maybe it does too much. We should probably split it up and do some other things with it. But it does a lot in one single function. But the funny thing is it's doing all this processing, and it usually just takes like half a second or a second.
I assume, Scott, since Azure comes from Microsoft, C# is probably the only language you can use to write a function?
Heck no. Heck no. Node.js, all kinds of support. There's F# stuff out there. I mean, in fact, you can create these now. You can create and access these in Visual Studio 2017. There's a little bit of an issue, as I mentioned, with Cloud Explorer. Like, I think it's cool that I can now remote debug my Azure functions through Visual Studio. The problem is that the RC acts kind of goofy, and I didn't want to demo that. So just know you can actually create and manage your Azure functions in Visual Studio IDE. You could even remote debug them. We're going to show it through the portal, which is the old school. One of the other aspects is that the version keeps updating. It's finally, just as of yesterday, the day before, full version one of Azure Functions. But it has, Azure Functions have full .NET Core support. So that's why it's cool to throw in here, because the underlying baseline is .NET Core, and then we have the same concept where if we want more, we just add NuGet packages, right? And the NuGet packages will get added for us. All we have to do is reference them in the function. So as I mentioned, they're created as in the Azure portal. They're managed as an app service. And the reason why I care about this is because they're managed like I would a web app or an API app. If I'm familiar with the blades, if I'm familiar with the UI, then I'm familiar with what it takes to manage an Azure function. And there's really three pieces of an Azure function. One of them is required, one of them is mostly required, and one of them is usually required, if that breakdown makes any sense. There's a run file that is actually the function code, what we think of the function code, the actual methods in that code. There's a function file that is kind of describing the function triggers and parameters. So remember I said that functions have to respond to an event. And there's a project file. Guess what this project file is called? Project.json. Hmm. So project.json files still exist in functions. So what's going to happen tomorrow or next month or next year with that? I don't know, because we still have project.json files here. And we still have them, I believe, in UWP apps and some other areas. We just don't have them in .NET Core, ASP.NET Core solutions. And the other thing about it, when we have these pieces of the function, is that we can easily, and the reason I put it in the anatomy of a function is that we have these app service settings and connection strings that we refer to, kind of how we could with appsettings.json in our solution, but we have app settings now that are in the Azure function. And the great thing about this, in the Azure function app, because the great thing about Azure function apps is you can share these properties. So if you're creating 100 functions in a function app, they can all, if you want them to, share these unified app settings, connection strings. You replace them in one, you set them in one place and do all of that stuff. So in this example we're going to look at, for example, we're going to be calling Cognitive Services Computer Vision API. There's going to be a subscription key. We keep the subscription and key in there, and we can call it from wherever we want, or a storage account or whatever. So here are, this is actually extended beyond this, potentially in preview and beta, but in general, here are what we're calling function bindings. I'm going to mention right now that there, I don't know if it's documented yet, but there is a binding that's actually input and output. It's an in-out binding type that you can use. We're going to use it to show people how it's used. But most of the bindings that we're talking about are going to be either input or output, typically. So here are the ways that you can trigger a function on a schedule. It's going to be a cron schedule, if you're familiar with cron logic. It's syntax for a timer job, basically, a schedule. The only limitation or the challenge with cron logic and the cron timer jobs is that it can't be less than a minute. So if you have an idea that you want something to kick off every 5 seconds using this technique, it's not going to work. You can set the second it kicks off, but the minimum will be a minute. We also have HTTP REST or webhook. And the reason why this matters is because functions are great to write webhooks, right? So there's a Slack webhook or a Team webhook or a OneDrive webhook that basically is saying, I want to respond to an event when something happens in a third-party service. Well, that's what webhooks are for. It's a perfect scenario for that. You can do what we're going to do. One of the other scenarios we're going to do is respond to object storage. So we can say whenever something happens in object storage, a new file gets uploaded, then we're going to respond to that. We can respond to event hubs, storage queues, tables when stuff gets added there, mobile apps. We can have a binding input and output into DocumentDB. Remember we mentioned that early on in the session and haven't looked at it too much, but we will show how we can talk to DocumentDB through an Azure function. And then what I love, one that I love that again is fairly underused, is Azure Notification Hubs and Push Notifications. So we could have a function that could send out a notification. Something gets uploaded to a blob, it sends a notification to any device, right? To your iPhone or to your Android phone or your Windows phone, whatever. So you can easily have that function communicate directly with the notification hub. And this doesn't have to be tiles or toast. This can be raw information that gets sent out that will kick off a process. So, for example, you could say anytime something, anytime an object gets uploaded into object storage, send my phone a raw notification that kicks off a process on my phone or my computer, whatever. So this that type of workflow is totally possible there.
Very, very cool. By the way, while you've been taking phone calls there, I've actually been doing some communicating as well with some folks here at Microsoft, and they said just to be absolutely clear, we're not renaming it object storage. It is blob storage. Object storage is a term we sometimes use for marketing purposes, but for us, for developers, it's what it always has been, and that is Azure Blob Storage.
Okay, so I'm glad that we got that clarification because I have been begging for this clarification. So here's what it took. It took for us to go on live worldwide TV around the world for somebody to answer. So that's great. So everything I said about it changing to object storage, that's just marketing, guys. Object storage is just a name that they're using. I'm still going to use object storage or blob storage. I'm just going to use those whenever I feel like it. But that's a great clarification on that. Okay.
Yep.
So when I say blob storage, I'm not going to feel bad anymore. I started to feel bad.
No, you should feel right, as a matter of fact.
Okay, great, great. Yeah. Thanks, folks at Microsoft. Thanks for making that clarification there. So here's what we're going to do in this demo. We're going to convert this process from using SQL Server 2016, because remember what we did is we went from Azure SQL, SQL 1000 2016. This is still sticking this whole file, this image file, out in a binary database. Very old-fashioned. We're going to change that to Azure Storage. And then we're going to add Azure DocumentDB into the mix for a reference. The reason why this is so cool is because, remember, DocumentDB is schema agnostic. So we get all of this stuff that will come back to us from cognitive services. We can just throw that in DocumentDB. And we're going to create an Azure function, and we're going to configure that function to connect to those object containers, blob containers. I'm going to call them blob again, as listeners and receivers. And then we're going to update our logic in our app so that whole process is integrated. So just to clarify, we're basically moving off of SQL Server, although I have to tell you, I'm still sending some stuff to SQL Server anyway just for fun, because it'll be fun when we get to the Power BI step. But this process of where you go in and you upload now will move to object storage as opposed to into SQL Server. So let's just flip back over to Visual Studio and take a look at how we're doing that. All right, so here I am in our Tagger solution, and I've taken our controller. If you remember from the first session, I had this upload image method. When somebody drags and drops an image, it comes to this upload image, and this used to go to SQL Server. And then we had this start analyzing images that would call cognitive services just in code here. I've changed these two methods now to use this upload as object async. If we go to that definition here, you'll see that we're using the cloud storage account client, cloud blob client, container client, that's kind of hard to say, cloud block blob, and this is a good time to say Not every single Azure service package, NuGet package, is ready for .NET Core. But the blob storage NuGet package is ready. For example, Azure Search also ready. Some of them not ready. There's a couple of them that I think will be ready by the time Visual Studio 2017 is totally released. But luckily, one of them that does work is for storage. You'll see what we're doing here is I'm just creating that Cloud Blob client, and I'm just writing those bytes into the blob storage here.
So we're writing the images directly into the blob storage, absolutely.
Yep.
And by the way, just to make sure everyone is clear on this as well, when you add a NuGet package to a .NET Core or ASP.NET Core project, you very much want to add a .NET Core compatible NuGet package, because then if you do want to run this on Linux or something, you can. Correct me if I'm wrong, I do have the option of adding other NuGet packages that have not been reshaped a little bit for .NET Core, but I am going to limit my platform options then, correct?
Okay, so that is essentially true. Mm-hmm. There's just some things that you're going to have to do differently. So for example, right now if I were to go and try and add a reference to something in this solution that's not 100% cross-platform .NET Core and will work on Linux, if I try and do that, the NuGet package manager will say you are targeting the wrong platform. But I can go into my project file and make some changes there and get full framework support. So what you said is absolutely true, but in this solution, since I'm staying right at .NET Core, and this is a benefit, the NuGet package manager is going to tell me you can't add this. I mean, you can't add this package like this because it's not targeted for this package.
That's nice. So it's not going to sneak up on you.
Exactly.
Package manager is going to let you know. So there may be a consequence to your action, but it's going to let you know there will be a consequence, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
You said you have 10 kids.
That's, yes.
Yeah, you're familiar with consequences, right?
Yeah.
Or at least your kids are. I bet Yes. They've heard that from mom and dad several times.
Yes, absolutely. And so the key element here is that now all we're going to do in code is just send it to blob storage. And there's a couple other things that I'm going to do because we've got sessions later and I want to grab some data. But really, this is all we're going to do. It's just that now we're going to go out and create an Azure function that will listen for that. So I've got the portal open here. And used to be able to go to functions.azure.com. I don't know if you still can, but that was a cool way to get in. But I've just got this function app I've created, and I'm just going to go out here and create a new function. And for those of you that haven't seen this, I have an option if I want to start with a template. And so as was mentioned, I don't have to use C#. I can use, you know, JavaScript or F# or some other things out there. You can take a look at all the different types of templates that are available. But for this scenario, I actually don't really care because I'm going to write this from scratch. So I'm going to call this analyze uploaded images. That sounds good. Uploaded images, or image, because it's going to come in one at a time, and I'm just going to say create. And this is going to just create this basic run out there, and I don't really care about that at all. Remember, I talked about three parts in a function that it was composed of. Number one is that run file. If I go to, say, view files here, I'll see that there's this run.csx that exists out here. I'm just going to copy and paste some code, and we'll take a look at that. Because as I said, this is actually a huge function. This probably should be broken up, but you know, this is fun to demo it this way with all this code. So you see that I still have this run. We need to highlight all of that and copy and paste. So you see that we still have this run method, but I've got some extra code in here. Let's take a few minutes and talk about some of these pieces, at least at a high level, and then we'll go back to them. First thing I want you to notice is if you're writing C# code in Visual Studio, you'll notice that this looks very familiar. I've got using statements up here. Some of you will be looking at that and saying, hey, what are these required directives in here doing? So I honestly don't know if the version of Azure Functions that was updated yesterday needs these, but as Azure Functions continues to get updated, it was on, you know, version 6, 7, 8, 9, and now 1.0. This is official. I think this is official at 1.0 now. There were some things that you needed to tell the function that certain namespaces were required. I used to have to tell it that, for example, Microsoft.Windows Azure.Storage was required, and then it would pull it into using statement. So these may not be necessary in this specific function, but this is basically a required, that it's saying this is required, and I'm going to reference this before I use it.
Azure Functions are relatively new also.
Yeah, they're relatively new, but they're moving fast. I was glad to see that they're in 1.0. So we have that run file here. We also have this function. Let me save that. And I'll open up the log so you can see that it's actually not going to compile. This I love too, because we can actually see if our code has compiled. It's give us a bunch of junk down here because we're not done building it. The other thing I want to do is go to that function file. This function file is going to say, is going to describe what our triggers are, what our inputs and triggers are. Remember I said that all functions have to respond to an event. So I've got this functions file out here I'll pull up. And I'll paste that in, and let's take a look at this. So my first binding is how it's going to get triggered. We see that this binding is of type blob trigger, so it's going to get triggered off a blob. And I'm actually going to point it to the specific container. If you remember earlier, we were in Object Explorer, and I've got these two blob containers here, app uploads and app downloads. I'm going to point it to that location for the blob trigger. Basically, what this is going to say is when I'm going to listen to see if something gets uploaded to that, to app uploads and blob storage. My connection, this tagger underscore storage, is actually coming from the app settings. So I can just refer to this tagger storage. It's going to refer to that storage location, object storage location everywhere. This second one is going to be a parameter that gets passed in, and it's going to be called container type blob, and it's going to reference that same app uploads. One thing I want you to notice here is this is referencing and passing a name value here. This gives me the ability to grab the name of the file that gets uploaded. I'm also referring this down here, and for this one, I'm using an in and out. And this is something that I mentioned earlier is not heavily documented. Normally, you think of the directions being in or out. Some objects have the ability to be in, out. And what this third parameter will let me do, this is not the same as an out parameter in a function necessarily. This kind of gives me the ability to read and write to this object. But instead of being the name as container, the name is blob, but I'm still passing in the blob. But notice here with the path, because people say this looks almost exactly the same. How do you know if it's a container or a blob? The path for this is app uploads, which is the container. The path for this is app uploads and the name, which is now going to be the blob itself. So I'm going to go ahead and say save there, and we're going to do one more thing. I'm going to actually add a new file. I'm going to call this project.json. Look at that. I brought project.json back. And I'm only going to add this. So this is going to be just like the project.json that you're used to. And I'm going to have two dependencies here, Windows Azure.storage and Microsoft.azure.documentDB. And if you can see down here, it's a little small, but if you can see down here when I say save, notice how it says restoring packages. So that's actually doing a package restore just like it would in Visual Studio when I make an edit. So I could actually make an edit, just an edit to that project JSON, and just like it does in the IDE, it's going to run and pull down those NuGet packages. So if I go back to that run, you'll notice that we've got this stream that's getting passed in, that this is the blob. This is what's referred to. Basically, this type of trigger passes an image. And then I've got a cloud blob container that matches the container over here, container. And I've got this blob that matches blob right here. See, the parameter name is container, parameter name blob. And then this trace writer is a log that comes in by default. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to walk through what this function is going to do. When this image comes through, I'm going to convert it to a byte array. I'm going to take the name of the blob that got uploaded, and I'm going to take off the path and make that the document ID. I'm going to get a GUID from that. I'm going to use this for document DB. I'm going to log that I'm analyzing the image. I'm going to go out to cognitive services and analyze the image, and we'll look at that method in detail a little bit later. And then I'm going to check to see if it's an adult image. If that's an adult image, I'm going to log it. I'm going to create a thumbnail from the image. I'm going to add the metadata. But then if it is an adult image, or in this example, if it's not an adult image, I'm going to add it to DocumentDB for indexing. And what we want to do here is if, you know, for some reason there's content that we might not want to show or things like that, people can upload that content. That's fine. That's not an issue. But we don't want to index it. We don't want any search results based on that when we get to search. And then I'm just logging that. So if we take a look at these functions, all of this code is going to look exactly like it would look in Visual Studio. So here's adding it to DocumentDB. I'm just spinning up a DocumentDB client. I'm taking the input that's that analysis, and I'm creating a document from it. And in this example, remember I mentioned earlier that DocumentDB can have attachments. So this is just going to create a JSON document, but a DocumentDB can have an attachment. So I'm actually throwing the image into DocumentDB if it gets indexed for the attachment. And so there's a few other things that are happening here that we'll take a look at when we get to cognitive services. But in general, every single thing that would have had to happen, logging it, sending it to DocumentDB, analyzing the image, moving that content around is going to happen. And the very end of that process, it's going to put it out. We'll just come down here. It's going to generate that thumbnail. It's going to generate that thumbnail and then put that image in a new blob. And it's going to send it, if we open up Storage Explorer, it's going to send it here to App Downloads. And it's going to include metadata. So here's an example here of one that's been recently uploaded. It says a couple of people that are posing for a picture, and it's tagged it there. Well, in this scenario, this is all happening via this function. So let's go ahead and save that function. Looks like we compiled there, no problems. And so it doesn't matter what we name this because it's just going to listen to it to be added to Blob Storage. So back in Visual Studio again, remember, now all we're going to do is upload it to object storage. So I'm still getting the longitude, latitude, and I'm still getting some things like that. I'm still going to stick some stuff over in some places, but I don't have to do it anymore. So now the real test for this, and as a note, we're also adding the telemetry event here that we referenced earlier, file added. So as the test for this, let's just test it. Let me just pull this up and test it, see if we can do this here. So here's what should happen. Of course, we don't know if this is going to break. We hope it doesn't break, but here's what should happen. Now I should upload, when I upload an image, it's not going to go to SQL Server. It's going to go out to object storage. And when it returns me to the results screen, it's going to now have the image. It'll be captioned and tagged. Now it's going to be this nice little thumbnail. It doesn't have to load the big image. It's going to be a nice little thumbnail. But when I look at it, if I expand it, then I can go and get the whole image. So we'll just see how this does here. How about if I select, we'll just take this image here, this group of people, and there we are in that image upload, and now it's grabbing it, and here's where now I'm going to listen to it. So what's happening out here, this delay here the first time is only because I'm actually listening to that second blob. This is not having to load data or load bytes or anything else. So there we go. Now this image is loaded up, and instead of pulling it from SQL Server, it's pulling it from object storage. And if I like it, I can pull it up. And this big preview is coming from the original image, but this smaller preview is just a thumbnail that's been created by Cognitive Services. So now why don't we go over to the slide deck and talk about what we're doing in Cognitive Services and how that's helping us out. Sound good?
Sounds great. I think for you and I both, Microsoft Cognitive Services is one of our favorite subjects because when it comes to building functionality and capabilities into applications that you might think almost impossible and certainly would be impossible if you were to have to code them yourself, Microsoft Cognitive Services just makes it amazingly easy to build apps that would have been unthinkable a few years ago.
Yeah, so if you're not familiar with Cognitive Services, you need to check it out. In fact, one of our next steps at the end of this session is to go out and check out Cognitive Services. There's a huge amount of stuff you can do out there, and this is stuff that honestly most people could not write, and nobody has written these by themselves. These are collaborations among really smart people that have created these services and said, we've got all this great stuff out here, and now you guys can just use it. Just plug and play into all of your apps.
Yeah, in fact, behind the scenes with Cognitive Services, there's a lot of machine learning being leveraged there. Models built and trained by some really smart people here at Microsoft and elsewhere. But why don't we talk a little bit about Cognitive Services and talk about some of the APIs available. Folks who are watching the broadcast have seen the effect of some of that when they see that they can upload an image and it gets automatically captioned. But how's that actually happening?
Yeah, so let's do that. So if we check out this next slide for computer vision API, here's right now what's getting exposed to us that we're using heavily. We have this ability to analyze an image or describe an image, and those are different, but in general what's happening here is this is where you get the ability to caption, tag, categorize images, and it's actually going to tell us a bunch of stuff about those images if we want as well. For example, like, is this line art? Is this a black and white image? What kind of tags are in there? It's going to tell us color schemes, what the dominant colors might be, or accent colors, going to tell us a whole bunch of stuff about that image. And my experience is this is pretty dang accurate. Some of them get to be really funny, but it's pretty dang accurate. And then
it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Then the thumbnail, the ability to create a thumbnail is different here. Now, some of you guys may be thinking, create a thumbnail, oh, that's real great. Like, I could create a smaller version, a lightweight version of any image. But this is not just a thumbnail. This is what they basically refer to, right, as a smart thumbnail here. So imagine if you have this photo that has, you know, a whole bunch of trees in the background and one person standing, not in the middle, but clear over to the side. A smart thumbnail will say, I think this is the important thing in this image, and we'll just clip it so that just that important piece will be in there. So this isn't just clipping an image or resizing an image. These are smart thumbnails that get created based on the intelligence that's been written for us in the computer vision API. One thing we're not going to show here is the ability to OCR. And so if we were to upload images that had text in them, you know, inspirational quotes, although inspirational quotes are not very inspiring for me, but they are for some people. So inspirational quotes that might get posted to Facebook or Twitter, they have an image of, could actually pull that content out of there. Here's a cool example of how to use that is if you were to OCR a bunch of your old documents even, you could pass them in and use the OCR services there and actually get the text of your documents if you have some old documents. Remember back when we used to use paper? Remember that, when we used to use paper for things?
I think I know what you're talking about. You know, it's worth mentioning, too, the Computer Vision API is one of more than 20 different APIs that make up what we call Microsoft Cognitive Services. And one of the others that gets used a fair amount is the Text Analytics API. So imagine you work for a large company and your marketing folks are concerned about what might be said about your company on Twitter. It's relatively easy to take that Twitter stream, search it for hashtags identifying your company or something, and feed that stream into the Text Analytics API, which analyzes the sentiment and says, are people generally expressing happy thoughts about your company or bad thoughts or something else? So it's really cool to play with this stuff, but a lot of this has real uses in enterprise applications.
Yeah, and that's just the reality of this. This stuff is fun, but this stuff has incredible business use. So a couple of things on Computer Vision API. One of the last one, besides tags and categories, I want to talk about this idea of domain-specific models. Domain-specific models are kind of specialized, industry-specific categories within a specific domain. So this in the SharePoint world, this is a fairly common notion out here with taxonomies and things like that. The domain-specific model that's available for everybody right now is actually based on celebrities. So you could say, you know, if you want to search to check if this contains a celebrity, but you could have other domain-specific models that are available. For example, if it was really important to you in the animal world, something related to certain breeds, just check to see if this has a breed or, you know, a certain breed of dog or something like that. There's a lot of ways we can go there. Yeah, so as Jeff mentioned, a whole bunch of other cognitive services out there. Here's some of the ones that are the most common that I love. Not only are we going to show computer vision, or not only are we working with computer vision, we're going to dig into that a little bit further, but a little bit later we're going to use LUIS, Language Understanding Intelligence Service, as well. But a whole bunch of great stuff out there, really fun to work with, but not just for fun. And here's how easy it is to call the computer vision API. There's other ways we can do this with SDKs and things like that, but it's just a post. It's just a REST post, and as with a lot of these services, you have a couple of options. For the computer vision API, I can just pass over a URL of an image that exists somewhere externally, or I can pass the bytes. In our example, we're passing the bytes. What we're doing is when somebody uploads an image, we're taking that byte array basically and passing the byte array to the computer vision API, and it's then reassembling that, analyzing it, and sending us something back. Now, the whole process, of course, just takes, you know, a millisecond. It's super, super fast. But in order to call that as developers, it's super easy. And so this makes it cross-platform everywhere. Anytime you have REST, it's going to be cross-platform.
I could do this from JavaScript. I could do it from any language that supports HTTPS, which is just about any computer programming language on the planet today.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. But if you like the help of an SDK, there are SDKs available. I've tried to, maybe this is bad, but I've actually tried to wean myself off of SDKs. Because there's two reasons. Number one, with an SDK, I don't really always know what's going to happen with the SDK. And number two, sometimes SDKs get removed, but the services are still available, and I like to be in control of that. With making REST-based calls, I feel like I have a little bit more control over that. So something to consider is to start getting used to the REST-based calls. So here's what we're going to do in this demo. I'm going to walk you through. I'm going to go back to that cognitive services function and show you specifically how I'm calling the computer vision API. And we're going to upload that. We're going to upload a couple of images there and go into Storage Explorer ourselves and see the ones that we uploaded. Now, some of this data is honestly fast moving. I've looked out there and we've actually got thousands and thousands of images already out there. So some of this is fast moving. So I'm going to try and catch it in time to go over to Storage Explorer and get it. If we don't, then we're not going to worry about that. But let's do that. Let's flip back over to that function. Bring that up. And I want to just call out just this, two of them here. Let's see. Get image analysis async. So let me make that a little bit bigger for you guys. So as Jeff mentioned, super easy to do via HTTP. So I'm just spinning up an HTTP client. I'm calling and getting the subscription key for my function app services configuration. I'm setting this default header. This is not true for everything, but for all cognitive services, they're all going to need this OCP subscription key, APIM subscription key. I'm just sticking that in. Great thing that I love about this, since it's not a client-side experience, I don't have to worry about OAuth, managing tokens, anything like that. I've just got this subscription key I can send over. And for this example, I'm saying that it's going to be Octet Stream, which is binary stuff. And I'm just calling this URL and I'm telling it what features I want. I want you to bring me back color, image type, tags, category, description, and whether it's adult content or not. And adult content contains two different areas, adult and is racy. So some cultures may consider things that are racy as more adult. This gives us a percentage there to say, here's actually a racy percentage. And the funny thing is here is that from my understanding, this is actually culture specific. You can make this culture specific as well, because what will be racy in one culture may not in another culture, typically. And so then all I'm doing is calling this and I'm bringing it back into this object and I'm using this. For those of you that are serializing and deserializing JSON data back and forth, get get fall in love with is read as a sink. Now, some of you are going to look at that and you're going to say, oh, I use that all the time. I bet you don't. I bet you are using read as stream, read as string, read as these other things. You're not using this new read as a sync, which is actually an extension method. This is the newfangled better way, instead of using the data JSON serializer, whatever that long name is, because that stuff's not supported anymore. Remember how we said a bunch of stuff is going away in .NET Core System.web is gone? System.lots of stuff is gone, actually. The new cool way to do it is faster. It's actually just faster to just say read as, and I pass it a class. So I'm just saying read this, whatever comes in, read it as this image analysis info. And this image analysis info is just class down here that I've created. And how did I create this? I took the sample JSON, and in Visual Studio I did a paste as JSON. And that gave me this, that output that. So that's another tip. If you're a developer using Visual Studio and you didn't know that you can paste special paste as JSON, if you take in JSON data, this doesn't have to be a structure, but this could actually be a big mess of JSON data. In Visual Studio, you can just open up a class file and say paste as JSON, and it won't paste the data, but it will paste the structure of that data. It'll paste what you see here, this class. Okay, so when I pull that back, from image analysis, then I'm just updating the metadata here. I'm using this same blob that that got passed in, and now I'm just popping metadata onto it here. Is adult content, et cetera. Go ahead.
Right, metadata for a blob. It's something you can attach to any blob in blob storage. It's just a series of key value pairs, so it can be anything you want to and as much or as little as you want to. Very, very useful when you want to attach additional information to a blob beyond what you might be storing in the blob itself.
Yep, exactly. And so here's the truth. So if you're a developer and you're looking at this and you're saying, okay, that's great, but how do I use that metadata? Like, how am I going to search against or whatever? We're not searching against this. I'm actually adding all of this on here for fun so that as viewers you see how easy it is to do this. But the real power of all this great stuff that comes back is going to come back. Remember, this is going to come back as JSON. And what format are DocumentDB documents?
I believe you said JSON.
JSON. So I'm just going to stick this whole thing, remember, into this document. And in the next session, I think it's the next session. Oh, no, it's search. We're actually going to go look at the content that gets sent out to DocumentDB. That's going to be the real win for us, is we're going to take all of that data. Because remember, DocumentDB is schema agnostic. I can just take a big blob of JSON data, pun intended, blob of JSON data, and send it out to DocumentDB, and I'll show everybody how we can manage Azure Search against that DocumentDB information. So let's go back to this process. Let's just test it one more time. Make sure we're happy with it. And what I want to do is then just show the output in storage. So I'm going to say load more, get all of that information out there. There we go. And we'll sort that by last modified. See if we can do that there. I want to upload and we'll wait. And then I just want everybody to go see the in and out over in Azure Storage Explorer. All right, so there we go, and we'll upload. This time, how about if we just do these penguins? Are those penguins? I don't know if those are penguins. So again, so this is going to upload it. This actually already uploaded it to blob storage. The only reason there's even a delay here, remember, is because I'm just, for this demo, I'm listening to the second blob storage container for when that's ready. Whenever that's ready, then I'm going to go ahead and show it on the screen. All right, so there we go. That's all uploaded there. See if we can see that there is EE9. We'll see if we can refresh that. We'll say load more. last modified is that EE9 there. So it looks like it already moved too fast. Already moved too fast for us. You guys will just have to trust me on that one. Let's see, we've got this one. Group of young people playing football in the grass. So that content's moving too fast for us. I can see right now. There we go. Had it sorted the wrong direction. Have you ever sorted the wrong direction before?
Never.
So there we go. We'll see that this is a bird standing in the dirt. Very clever caption on that one and how everything's been tagged there successfully. Okay, great. So how about if we push this update out so that everybody can start using this? And again, I don't know what kind of activity they're having. I don't know what kind of success they're having out there. I know that some people have experienced a little bit of a delay out there when you're at tagger.it, but we'll go ahead and push this out just while we're waiting. So I'll say publish. We'll hope that this doesn't crash. There we go. So this is pretty cool. This is a big deal because now, remember, we're combining all of that stuff that mm-hmm. we were doing in our code, just in the controller, a helper feature in that controller. Oh, hold on. Hold on. Why are we publishing that? So apparently Clippy is calling here. Let me just answer that. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, no, I totally understand. All right. Yeah, all right. Okay, bye-bye. So apparently Clippy was just feeling left out, wanted to be part of it. So Clippy's feeling left out. If you can just include Clippy in what you're doing out there, maybe say, we love Clippy, tweet we love Clippy or something there on Twitter in a hashtag. That might be helpful because Clippy's feeling left out.
Shout out to Clippy.
All right, shout out to Clippy. So there we go. So that should be live to you guys now at tagger.it. See if you can get used to that process. And again, you're going to have a little bit of a delay. The benefit at the end is that you're just going to load up that thumbnail instead of having to load that big object, and everything's going to be out in object storage. So we're going to take a short break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about Power BI and Office Graph. We thought there's some cool things we could do in that area that you guys would be interested in. And so we'll be back in about 10 minutes.